Accession number 30065, Reel 1.
Here we are then. This is Laura Gordon and it's Reel 1. And if I could ask you, first of all, Laura, to tell me something about your background. Whereabouts were you living before the war in Germany?
I was living in a place called Wuppertal, Wuppertal, which is only famous for having an overhead railway that hangs on wheels. I was born, as you know, the date, into a family, a very happy family. My father, with his brother and grandfather and great uncles, owned a shop, a store really, but we didn't have food or shoes. We didn't stock that. So, you know, we were comfortable.
Well, what was he selling in the store?
Clothing, men and women's, carpets, everything, except shoes and hats. And food, there's no food, of course.
You were born in 1923,
yes,
weren't you, Laura?
Yes.
So I imagine the early years were rather difficult for your family, because one hears about the post-war inflation and unemployment.
I think the... Yes, but having a store which made money, they overcame that. But for example, they had three on the staff when I was born, and they're just paid in kind. And they fill the girls' bottom drawers. I don't know. Of course, I was too young to know how they really did survive the inflation, because I know that when my mother was given 6 strawberries, she said it cost thousands of marks.
Yes, one hears these stories of suitcases stuck
full of money. Yes,
yes,
that's right. Yes.
What are your memories of childhood? Your you know, this would be 1923, before Hitler, before things began to change.
I think, I really do think, I had a very privileged childhood. We were loved and had parents who doted on us, but my mother didn't spoil us, nor did my father. But I mean, she had the upbringing under her, and she didn't spoil us, but we still had a privileged childhood, I feel. We had friends and had our birthday tea and all sorts of things, which of course all stopped in 1933.
I understand your mother wasn't Jewish.
No, my mother was a Christian, and I have written my story. They had a wonderful love story, quite amazing really, my parents. Both sides didn't want the liaison. But they went ahead. And except my Jewish grandmother, who was very sensible, she went to the registry office and to the wedding, and then went back to the shop and said to the girl, the first girl she saw, she said, "Congratulate me, I have married my son well." But I don't remember this particular grandmother very well, because she was suffered with her nerves, as they then said, and was often in a sanatorium.
Yes. So, were you brought up under any particular religion? Did you go to shul, to synagogue, or...?
Yes, I went to Jewish classes. The rabbi used to have to come to the school. And I went regularly to the synagogue with my father, yes.
Did your mother convert?
No, he wouldn't have it. He said, "You do not change your religion because you want to get married." Little realizing that in 1943 it would save his life, because it meant he was a member of a mixed marriage, and the Germans, being so methodical, deported him later than the others. I mean, other people like that. So he survived, but he was down to 90 pounds. He was starving. But the Russians, who overran the camp, nursed him back to health. Took them 4 weeks to get him back to strength, because he had the hunger edema on knees and ankles. You see it sometimes on African children.
How about your schooling before Hitler?
I went to a private primary school and a very old-fashioned lady, but she gave up when she was 80, which was after my second year at her school, and a very modern headmaster took over, and I had learnt the old German script, thin up, and wrote it very well, but he insisted on the modern script, and my present-day awful handwriting is the result of that, of that mixture. And then I went to a lyceum for girls only. I think it was also partly paid, but there was an element of state in it, I think. But I'm not really quite sure. I know my father couldn't be spoken to when he had to pay school money. He had three children. I had a brother, you see, as well.
Oh, did you? How old was your brother?
My brother was 1.5 years older than I was.
So he would have been 17 and a half when war started.
Yes, and he couldn't come on the Kinder transport, of course.
And you had a sister, Ursula?
Ursula, yes, she was 13.
Your first memories that things, you know, were getting difficult with the rise of Hitler, can you remember?
Yes, I can remember it very well, because my grandfather, in whose house we lived, and he lived with us, had a whole floor in the house, was listening to the radio. And I remember him hearing of Hitler coming to power at Hindenburg. I think it made him Vice Chancellor. And he put his hands on his head, and he rocked backwards and forwards. And I knew he was distressed, but of course, yes, I did know why. I did know why. My sister wasn't so, you know, she was too young, really, to appreciate it all.
And how did life change for you, you know, after 1933? Was it a very gradual change?
How old was I? 10? Yes, the first thing was that we had to get onto the Lyceum. This was just about that time. There was a numero clausus. Only so many children were allowed. And there were two Jewish children and two half-Jewish children in my class. Of course, this was before 38, which changed it completely, the Kristallnacht. So I was able to go to the Lyceum, but when Hitler came to power, we were no longer allowed to have our religious classes in the school. We were sent, and I think it was meant to be an insult. His pupils, had to go to the school for slow learners. And on the way there, the children always called us names.
And would these have been children previously you played with?
These were children in this area of the town who knew that it was a school for, they called them, Dummkopf, you see, they call them. But so they just shouted things at us when we went there. They didn't know the difference, that we were just using the school for the lesson.
What was the proportion of Jewish people to non-Jewish in your area, in Wuppertal?
Well, I believe there were 3,000. I don't know, it wasn't a great deal. I could be wrong, because I can't remember whether it was 300,000, the population of Wuppertal.
Not to worry about that. Just wondering, you know, if you'd had sort of non-Jewish friends before.
Oh, yes.
And if they still behaved to you in a friendly way.
Oh,
whether they changed.
Well, they didn't. They did at first still ask me to their birthday parties. I had lots of non-Jewish friends. But one day my mother took me aside and she said, you can no longer ask them, and they cannot ask you anymore. And one of these girls was in the BDM. I won't give you her name because of the story as it goes on. She stood up one morning and looked at the girl who was sitting next to me, a friend still in Münster in Germany, and said, well, Lottie, she said, do you remember what they told us at the BDM last night? In other words, they told them not to sit next to Jewish children. That's what it was implied. But she never moved from my side. And this particular girl who said that now rings me once a week and has written me two letters of apologies. And we have a chat and talk. She's also visited me years and years ago. But, well, I mean, we carried on normally. I had an excellent form teacher who was, in my opinion, a really strong anti-Nazi. And she was so good. I'm not boasting now. I had scarlet fever. And because I missed so much schooling, I had extra lessons that particular year. And at the end of the year, I came top of the class. I've never been again. But of course, you weren't supposed to be clever because you were Jewish. So she came in with her reports and she said, I want to read you one. And she read this report, gave the subject and mark, and then she took the piece of paper, got off her podium, teachers were on podiums in those days, and put it in front of me. Now she could have lost her job over that. So that need only somebody have told on her, but she did that, so very kind. And I visited her when she was dying in Germany. I had a letter sent from England to say she was ill there and there, and I meant to see her. It was wonderful that I was able to.
How were the Hitler's policies affecting your parents and your economic situation?
Until the boycott of the shop by the brown shirts, there wasn't much difference. But now, what was I wanted to say? Could you ask a question again?
Yes, how your parents' economic situation was affected by Hitler and his policies. Did they have to, could they still keep the store under their own name?
Until the Kristallnacht, yeah. No, they didn't. They had the boycott by the brown shirts, and that, because we had a lot of civil servant customers, they go for quality because their payment isn't that good. They came because they knew they sold quality. And they stayed away because they were afraid for their husbands' jobs. And so gradually we had to go into receivership, I think in 1936. And the people who bought them out were C&A. Now C&A are a Dutch firm originally, C&A Brenninkmeyer. And the Dutch were staunch anti-Nazis. And I could never understand that. So I never ever, they've gone now, I never ever would go into any of their shops because they were the last I would have expected to step in. But they did.
So how did they cope after that?
Well, my father got went as a representative, showing his wares with a car. He went and travelled around with woolens, I think he had. And one of his employers then was the one who, when he came out of Theresienstadt, he went to him and said, get me a lorry and petrol. And he did, of course, then, after the war. And he got back to my mother like that, once he was fed up by the doctors again. Fed up to health again.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Kristallnacht. What was your experience of that? What were you doing at that time? You yourself, were you still in school?
Yes. No, I wasn't. My mother, I don't know how she had a premonition. She had taken me out of school when I was 15, all in the April of 38. I'm not speaking too fast, am I?
You're speaking perfectly.
Almost as if she had a premonition what would happen, and she put me like an apprenticeship with a Jewish dressmaker, because the idea was my parents had hoped to emigrate to America, and they had a number at the American consulate, which eventually came up in the war and they couldn't go anymore. But the idea was that my mother, who was a dressmaker, she'd been in the shop, head of the workroom. That's how they met my parents. She and I were supposed to keep the family going with our sewing while my father found a footing in America. That was the idea. But I didn't like sewing, although I've done it all my life, until now, and I can't see it anymore.
So you would have been doing this when Kristallnacht?
Yes, I was doing it, but my mother wouldn't let me go anymore. She said it was too dangerous. She wouldn't let me go to the Fräulein Kirschbaum anymore.
That was after Kristallnacht?
After Kristallnacht, yes. I suppose she rang up and said, I can't send the child, you know.
Could I ask you about Kristallnacht and
yes,
what you witnessed and felt about it?
Well, we just heard it, I suppose, by telephone. I mean, we didn't live in the middle of the town where the shops were smashed. We heard that the synagogue had been burned, that the shops had all been damaged. And, of course, my father was taken to Dachau. My mother hid my brother. I don't remember where, but she hid him. He was then born 21, he was 17. Yeah. And I couldn't go anymore, so my brother and I he couldn't go to his Jewish school in Cologne where he was. My mother wouldn't let him go there anymore, so we just stayed at home. He did the cooking, I did the cleaning. I liked that better than cooking in those days, and he loved cooking.
Yes, how long was your father in Dachau for?
Now, my late husband and he was also taken, and he came back after 3 weeks. We knew the families knew each other, and he told us that my father was all right. Now, he had come out because he could prove that he was going to leave for England, where he had a cousin living, but my father, of course, didn't, but they still sent him home after 3 weeks. And I remember him lying on the couch with his eyes shut, and he would never, ever told us anything about it. Never spoke about it. Had to report to the police every day for quite a long while.
Did he look different, your father,
strained, I think. Stressed, strained.
Was that a real watershed, Kristallnacht, you know, in the persecution?
Yes, I think it was. Although I wasn't, obviously, there when my parents discussed it, but that must have given them the idea that we must go. It broke my mother's heart to let all of us went. And she heard about the Kindle transport, I suppose. You know, people tell each other, don't they? I don't know how they heard of it, but they must have heard of it through friends. You know how things get around. My father had a friend in England who was an engineer, and he was sent in February 39 to this Mr. Papier, and he became an engineer. He worked near the Black Wall Tunnel, and he lived for rent somewhere in Greenwich. So he went first. But my late husband was already over here. He had a cousin in England who'd married an Englishman. And he was already over here, and he kept sending to me to say, give me names of children, I'll try to find homes for them. And I used to send him, the post was lovely in those days, by return of post he had all the names of children, and he brought out quite a few. And end of his life, he said, I haven't achieved anything. I said, if you'd saved one life, but I said, look how many you've saved. He got all these children, quite a lot of them. I sent the pictures of them back to the Begegnungsstätte in Wuppertal, where they've gone into the archives. Not all of those, of course, he could save, all the pictures. Quite a few were victims.
But and he would have been a young man at the time, I expect.
He was, yes, I was 10. Wait a minute, how old was I? In 33, no, we're talking of 38 now. I was 15, he was 22.
Well, it's a young age, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
What was his name?
Alfred Auerbach.
Alfred Auerbach.
A-U-E-R-B-A-C-H.
A-U-B...
A-U-E-R.
Oh, I beg your pardon. A-U-E-R-B-A-C-H.
A-U-E-R-B-A-C-H.
Auerbach.
But when he was in the British Army, a question was asked in the House about these alien soldiers, as they're called, alien British soldiers, and they were given permission, I think, to omit their place of birth out of their pay book and to change their names if they wanted to. And his mother was a Ney Gordon. I suppose it came from Poland. She didn't, but I think it was a Jewish name in Poland. And so he chose her maiden name. He became Alfred Gordon in 43, I think we did that.
So I imagine, being the age you were, you know, 16, did your parents take you into their confidence about the kinder transport and the fact that you were going to
Britain? Oh yes, they did, yes.
Did you have guardians organised?
Well, my mother came, yes, Warburton House, wasn't it Warburton House who found these people? She came over to England to visit the people we knew we were going to. And that's when she promised that I should go to church with the lady who had me.
Is that the promise she made to her, that you would go to church?
Yes, with her, which I did. Well, she was the only one who could drive, and she and her brother had bought a car, and she always drove them to church every Sunday, and I went with them.
What did you think about leaving your parents and going to...
Well, I think I was at the age where it was still an adventure, in a way. Not so my sister. She was pathetically homesick. But I never speak to her about it. She doesn't remember. She says, I loved coming to England, and that's that. And so I never mention it. But she was pathetically homesick for her mother. It was quite sad. But she married an Englishman. She has four children. She's very, very happy.
Do you remember getting ready to come and what you would have taken? And I think this brings in the story of the knapsack, doesn't it?
Yes. Now, we were allowed to take one suitcase and the rucksack. So I suppose we took our clothing. But the only thing I remember, which was quite unusual, and my foster mother couldn't get over it, she gave me... She packed 12 pairs of silk stockings. There wasn't a nylon then for me, and I think they lasted for years. That was her intention. Otherwise, it was just clothing and ordinary things. But would you like me to tell you the story of my brother's packing?
No, I'd like you to tell you the story of the rucksack.
Ah, the rucksack.
I understand you have very kindly donated this
to
the museum.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, it was in the suitcase, wasn't it, at Liverpool Street Station, or sometimes it was. They were exchanged for things in there. But that's no longer there, of course, you know that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's why everything's come to you here.
Oh, I see,
that
yes.
Was intended for the rucksack.
Uh-huh.
No, not for the suitcase. It was a transparent suitcase with a little bronze girl standing next to it.
Yes.
But now they've got this wonderful rail with five children standing at the end of the railway line.
Yes, I saw it the other day.
Yes, and they've called the square Hope Square here.
That's right.
Yes.
It's very nice.
It's very nice.
And you very kindly donated the rucksack to the museum.
Yes.
It would be very nice if you could tell me the story of that, what you remember about this particular rucksack, so that people looking at it in the future will be able to listen to your voice describing it and what was in it. Do you think you could do that?
I cannot remember exactly what was in it.
But do you remember the rucksack itself?
I remember the rucksack very well.
Yes.
And the fact, what I liked about it was that my father, with his very good handwriting, had written a name and number in it, and that my mother had sewn it in. I suppose it contained the smaller things, like toiletries, hair and brushes, toothbrushes, toothpaste, things like that, I suppose it contained. It was quite heavy by the time it was finished.
You kept it a long time, hadn't you? The fact that it's still there today.
Oh, yeah, I used it sometimes. But I kept it a long time, yes.
Did it mean a lot to you?
It did, really, yes.
And I think the name, am I right in thinking that people can still see your name on this?
I believe so. When I gave it, it probably was still readable.
Are there any other items you remember bringing over that you have very kindly donated to the museum?
No, I don't think I did.
Are there any little china pigs?
Yes, but I've got those still.
Oh, you still have
them? I have those that survived the bombing.
Right. I think they've made there's been a bit of confusion with the list they gave me. But that is very nice to know about the rucksack and the importance of it to you.
Yes.
So could I ask you now about sort of leaving? Did you have any sort of farewell meal or anything before you and Ursula were due to go?
I don't think we did, but I do remember the aunts, her sisters and uncles came to say goodbye. And we had my Jewish aunt. No, both my father and brother married Christian. So the aunt lived upstairs. So one of them, she was widowed by then, because he tried to get too many benefits for his two daughters, and they got so fed up with him, I think, that they came and arrested him. And 2 days later, they sent a message to say he died of pneumonia. Well, obviously, in 2 days, you don't die of pneumonia, do you? And we said goodbye to the Christian part of the family. But an hour or so before we went for the station, my Christian grandfather came. He was a very upright, sort of, you know, rather tall gentleman. And we were very fond of him. My grandmother had died. And when we left, he walked everywhere. We overtook him in the street. And he seemed to sort of hunch his shoulders. I remember that, the way he looked.
Where did you depart from?
From Wuppertal, or from Düsseldorf. But we went by train from... No, we didn't. Yes, we went by train from Wuppertal to Düsseldorf. And in Düsseldorf, there was the assembly of all the children, because it was a special train just for the children. But some were very little. I just don't know how they could have... four. There was somebody of age four. We were so bewildered in a way. And I promised my mother I would look after my sister. So obviously, you know, I was concentrating on her, really. And I wasn't that old, really, was I? I was 16. But I was quite my mother said I was quite a mature 16. And of course, we looked out of the window. We said goodbye to the parents on the platform, got into the carriage, and then looked out of the window. And my parents and other parents stood near the window.